John chapter 6, verse 47. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, and they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh. The Jews then disputed among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? So Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me and I in him. As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so whoever feeds on me, he also will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like the bread the fathers ate and died. Whoever feeds on this bread will live forever. Seems like I'm going to have more trouble than I thought I would this morning. Around 3,500 years ago, the people of Israel numbered in the hundreds of thousands, even the millions. And this large multitude of people was out in the middle of the desert with no food and no water. Apparently, the whole host of them was going to starve to death, and their bones would be scattered in the desert sand. Well, needless to say, the people of Israel were a little bothered by this prospect. They complained to Moses, Aaron, and to the Lord. And God, being a gracious God, granted them food in the form of manna. Manna was a kind of delicious bread that descended from heaven onto the ground with the morning dew. Now, this manna was, of course, a symbol of God's loving care. He was demonstrating that he would do whatever was necessary to take care of his people. But it was deeper than that. Manna was a test. As Moses said to the Israelites in Deuteronomy 8, verse 16, God fed you in the wilderness with manna that your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and test you to do you good in the end. Now, what was the test? Well, God gave the Israelites strict instructions in regards to the manna. He wanted to see if the Israelites would follow his instructions. God sent the manna only on Sunday through Friday, right? Because they weren't supposed to work on Saturday. So he wanted them to gather the manna on Sunday through Friday, but he didn't want them to gather anything on Saturday, because that would be work. That was the Sabbath day. So on Sunday through Thursday, they were supposed to gather only enough for that day and no more. On Friday, they were supposed to gather double because they needed to save some up, store some up for Saturday when there would be no manna. Everyone following me? All right. So it was kind of a test of following instructions. I'm sure he did a better job explaining it than what I did. But it was more than just a test of following instructions. It was something deeper than that. It was a test of humble faith. As Moses said in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3, and he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of God. God wanted the Israelites to learn to trust him on a daily basis. He wanted them to depend not on bread or on the work of their hands for the basic necessities of life. He wanted them to have to look to him daily, each and every day, for sustenance. Now, many of the Israelites failed the test, of course. The first day, you know, which seems to have been some sort of a weekday, Sunday, Tuesday, something like that. The first day, they go out, they gather manna, and some of them were worried that maybe manna wouldn't come the next day. So they gather double, triple. They just gathered as much as they could. They stored it in jars inside their tents. So they go to bed that night. They wake up in the morning. They open the jars to make their breakfast, and there's maggots all in the manna. Not something you want to see first thing in the morning. And then they felt really dumb when they walked outside their tents and discovered there was plenty of manna all over the place. They could have just not bothered. Then Friday comes, the day they're supposed to gather twice as much in order to store up for the next day. Now, some of the Israelites had seen what had happened with the maggoty manna, and they didn't want that to happen, so they didn't bother storing up. Because they figured, it's sort of like the sun comes up every day. Well, manna comes every day, right? It's just a natural law. I don't have to worry about it. Manna will come. So they didn't bother. So they get up in the morning. Let's go out and get the morning's manna. They walk outside, no manna. Just more sand. So they didn't quite get it. They doubted God no matter which direction it was going. They doubted the word of the Lord. Now the manna was a sign of God's loving care, but it was also a sign of the Israelites' total and absolute dependence on the Lord. The manna showed that the Israelites were powerless on their own. There's no way they could make food in the desert. It showed the need to trust God daily. And also, it showed the need to trust what he says and to take him at his word. Because that's what faith really is. But there's something even deeper than that. Fast forward about 1,500 years. We are moving on to events that took place to events that took place 2,000 years ago. About 10,000 to 20,000 Jews are all gathered on a hillside around Jesus. It soon becomes obvious that these people did not think to pack a bag lunch, nor did they bother to stop for takeout at Aunt Carrie's in Galilee. So there was a mob of hungry people with hardly any food in easy reach. Jesus took what food he had available, 5 small loaves and 2 fish, and he miraculously broke them into enough pieces to feed the multitude with some left over. Now the crowd, being Jews, made the obvious connection between Jesus feeding the multitude and God feeding the Israelites with manna in the wilderness. They thought that they had hit upon the gravy train. Free food for life. Just follow Jesus. And follow Jesus they did. They chased him to the next town, even when he tried to get away from them. Jesus, Jesus, show us a sign. By which they meant, Jesus, Jesus, give us more free food. But Jesus pointed out to them that they had missed the deepest meaning of the manna and of the feeding of the 5,000. Look at John 6:49, which we just read. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, and they died. The manna only helped people temporarily. It could not give eternal life. Eventually, all of the Israelites who ate the manna died. This is true also of the bread which Jesus fed the multitude. Look back at verses 26 and 27. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not labor for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you." The people in Jesus' day were looking for the wrong food. They were missing the fact that the bread that Jesus had given them and the manna that God had given their ancestors, these were meant to point them towards something else. The manna was just a symbol that pointed towards the true bread, the bread that can grant eternal life. Look back down at verse 50. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. And look at verse 58. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like the bread the fathers ate and died. Whoever feeds on this bread will live forever. Now, what is the bread that one may eat of it and not die? Well, Jesus tells us in verse 48. I am the bread of life. And look at verse 51. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh. The manna in the wilderness and the bread and the fish on the hillside were both pointing to Jesus, who is the bread of life. Now, Jesus is obviously speaking metaphorically. He is obviously not bread. He means that he is the source of life, just as bread was the most common food people ate to sustain their lives. When he says that he is giving his flesh for the life of the world, evidently he is referring to his death on the cross, the means by which his body is used to bring life to people who believe in him. The image is a little unsettling, however. It almost sounds as if Jesus wants us to eat him. And this bothers the Jews too. Look at verse 52. The Jews then disputed among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? If they were looking for Jesus to explain himself, they were gravely disappointed. Jesus proceeds to make statements that are even more disturbing. Look at verses 53 to 55. So Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. Now, it's pretty clear that he's speaking metaphorically. In the days where we're really into vampires and werewolves, the days of Twilight, we might get a little distracted by the metaphor. But obviously, he's speaking metaphorically. We all know that he's not advocating cannibalism. So what is the metaphor? Well, the answer lies in verse 47. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes has eternal life. Jesus says that eternal life is given to those who believe. Now look back down at verse 54. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. Jesus here says that eternal life is given to the one who eats his flesh and drinks his blood. I think the conclusion we can draw is that eating Jesus' flesh and drinking his blood is a metaphor for believing in Jesus. Now, why this particular gruesome metaphor? Why would Jesus choose this particular metaphor? What's so important about it that he would think it's worth making us think about something so odd? Well, I think there are several reasons. One is that Jesus' flesh and blood is an obvious reference to his death. We are to believe in Jesus' death and resurrection in particular. So it's not just Jesus in general, it's the fact that Jesus gave his body and his blood for us on the cross. Another reason is that food and drink are the source of life. None of us can live without food and water. In the same way, none of us can live without Jesus. Look at verse 53. So Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. You're dead without Jesus. This dependence, So in other words, this metaphor shows up our dependence on Jesus for our lives. We're dependent on him as our source of life. And this dependence is a connection, just as we are connected with what we eat. Look at verse 57. As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so whoever feeds on me, he also will live because of me. The Son was connected to the Father, and by this means he had life. So too, when we believe in Jesus, we are connected to Jesus, and by this means we have life. Now, I think there's a little more to this connection, and at this point, I cannot help but quote the great Hank Hange. I have often heard him say something like this, and you can correct me if I get it wrong, Hank. Do you know that what you eat today goes walking down the street tomorrow? Did I get it right? Good. In other words, you are what you eat. Look at verse 56. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. By partaking of Jesus, by believing in Jesus, you and he become part of each other. Now, part of what that means is that you gradually become more and more like Jesus. He not only grants you eternal life, but he also grants you a new way of living. Now, I think another reason Jesus used this metaphor is because he knew he was going to be providing us with a symbol that would remind us of this metaphor. That symbol is communion. Here we have the bread, here and here, and that symbolizes his flesh. And here we have the cup, which symbolizes his blood. Now we pass these around, and those of us who are followers of Jesus take the bread and take the cup. We then eat the bread and drink the cup to symbolize the fact that we believe in Jesus. By eating the bread and drinking the cup, we are saying that we believe in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. We are depending on him as our source of eternal life. But we are also symbolizing that we are connected with Jesus. That's one of the reasons it's called communion. Communion with each other, but also communion with Jesus. We are daily drawing on him for our spiritual life. That's what we say when we take communion. By partaking of Jesus, we now abide in him and he in us. He is working in us and changing us to be more like him. Now the physical bread and the physical juice and the physical act of eating them do nothing for us beyond what they normally do if you eat bread or drink juice. They are merely a symbol, but they are a symbol that is full of deep meaning. And it's good to remember that meaning as we partake of communion. Now, communion is a symbol for believers only. If you are not a believer, this table is not for you. Let the bread and the cup pass you by. You don't want to say by partaking that you believe when you really don't. But before you let it pass you by, I want to share these words of Jesus. Jesus says to you, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. And whoever believes in me shall never thirst." Stop searching and working for things that do not satisfy. Things that cannot truly bring you life. Why not trust in Jesus this morning? Instead of turning away the bread and the cup, why not take them? Let eating the bread and drinking the cup be your first symbolic act of faith. I've known several people who have done this. When they came to understand what communion really meant, when they came to understand that they needed to trust in Jesus, they decided that that was going to be their way, that they were going to say to Jesus, "I trust in you," as they took communion. They let that be a physical act saying, "Yes, I believe in you. I depend on you for my life. I want that deep connection with you, Jesus." If you choose to take that step this morning, please talk with me afterwards. Now, if you are a believer and you have taken communion many times, use this time to reaffirm your faith in Jesus Christ. Just don't take it ritualistically without really thinking about it. Reaffirm your dependence on Jesus. Reaffirm your connection with him. Tell him that you want to abide in him and you want him to abide in you. I think it's time for the men to come forward as we sing another song.